Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, Fred Locken, professor of political science at Truckee Meadows Community College, for the whole show on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Chan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Chan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're pleased to welcome to the program Fred Locken. He is professor of political science at Truckee Meadows Community College. Always a pleasure to have you here on the program, sir.
Thank you, Sam. It's good to be here.
So as we look at tax policy on the Hill, it seems like nothing's different. It seems like Congress is operating as Congress operates.
Well, it really has been, and the coverage of it has been kind of bizarre. I mean, the notion that the House of Representatives would approve a tax change is as consistent as they were in dealing with the repeal of Obamacare. The issue has always been the United States Senate. It's close at 52-48, and to me, it's where the action is going to be as we come into the Christmas holiday, because there are some challenges ahead for the Republicans in getting anything out of the Senate, much less reconciling it with the House versions. But the legislative process is always very messy. It's supposed to involve everyone. I think what I'm frustrated in seeing, and there were tactics that certainly were used during the Obama administration as well, Democrats and Republicans guilty of them, but the freezing out of Democrats completely, much less the rest of the Republican Party, to have these sort of almost clandestine committees work out the details without any involvement from their own members, much less the Democrats, is a very strange way to make legislation in the state.
But it's been the way it's been, you know, even under the Obama administration. Exactly. And getting Obamacare through, it was all done with Democrats and the negotiating within the parties themselves. It almost seems like a party has to have 70 seats in the Senate to be able to get things done, because they need 60 votes, but there's going to be at least 10 that want to negotiate their own side deal to be able to get any policy through.
Well, and we're living, thanks to Harry Reid, we're living with the reality now of the 51 votes, because they are being able to use the parliamentary tactics to actually even keep the 60 vote cloture in effect. And by doing that, I mean, that pin was pulled because of the frustrations the Democrats had with the tactics being used by the Republicans when the Democrats were in majority. But now it's just backing the Democrats into the same spot the Republicans had been. This builds animosity, and this is what tears the fabric of bipartisanship. I've talked to members of the Senate and the House, and they individually are very pleased with the colleagues across the aisle. But it's just not accepted culture to work together anymore. They have to pick their sides and yell at each other, and it's destroying the republic.
And with both parties tearing each other apart at the seams from within. So you have the Clinton part of the Democratic Party, you have the Bernie Sanders part of the Republican Party, you have the battle-born right-wing part of the party in the Republican side, and the centrist Republicans on the other side. What has to happen, and do we want something to happen to change this, or isn't this truly the way the system was designed?
Well, I don't know that it was designed this way, although we certainly in our 230 years have seen it operate this way. If we look at the period between the early 1800s and the Civil War, I mean, I really tend to see many of the same problems now that plagued us then for decades. And it invariably in American politics always has to get worse before it gets better. We aren't a proactive, commonsensical political process. We get nasty sometimes. We get brutally bloody sometimes. And then somehow, some way, we push it too far, and then we've been able to kind of regroup for a while. But this type of partisanship isn't unique to the Republic in our lifetime. It's just unique to us and seeing how bad it can get. But this is a nation that went to civil war. This is a nation that has been at loggerheads over some of the most contentious issues over the 230 years. And so it's frankly more of the same politics. But we want to believe that there are times when we've been more compromising because that's what the founders wanted. The founders may have understood the division, but we designed a political system to protect slavery after all. But they, in essence, also hoped for that fair and political dialogue and discourse that would lead us to some area in the middle that, you know, some compromise give from the wings. We're supposed to be a centrist nation. We're supposed to find that middle ground and move forward. And that's not what we've been doing in the last few decades. And it hurts.
I spent a portion of last weekend watching, rewatching the movie Lincoln. And it's so fascinating to watch that because, to paraphrase Harry Reid, that's what I do every day. To see how passing the Emancipation Proclamation and then moving it forward to end slavery was all done in the lame dog session of the Congress. And the Senate had already passed it. And it was up to the House to get it passed. And Lincoln used patronage jobs to be able to get the people who had lost the election and wouldn't be coming back in January or February to vote for that. And then seeing how the people who had been in some ways vociferous in favor of slavery coming home to their African-American wives or slaves who were as wives.
We've always been a very inconsistent nation. But really, that is the demonstration of politics at its best. We often are maybe better not to know the details. But the patronage process, for instance, has always been a standard way. The deal making, you take people like Lyndon Baines Johnson, he was consummate expert at that, got a lot accomplished as a result. It's the notion from voters that we can throw people in there that aren't experienced and it's going to fix the problem. It has really exacerbated it. And we really do need people that can make the system work unless we're talking about revolution and radically changing it. It is the tried and true system of the political process, the sausage making that has actually kept America going forward, not populist candidates every once in a while that are a grenade in Washington trying to mix things up.
And it's a battleship. It's a destroyer that you're trying to turn around. It's not a small boat. And so therefore, it's going to be not one, but many terms. I remember talking to Ron Paul when he was visiting Nevada, and I was lucky enough to interview him several times. And he was saying that some of his notions that sounded initially crazy, but he said it's not going to take one or two terms to get these things turned around. It's going to take several terms. And so once you started thinking in that longer term, it made more sense.
It does. And the notion of a half a loaf, we don't get a mandate from voters. In the most recent election in 2016, although we had 134 million voters participate, we had 91 million voters stay home. There are a lot of voices that are not in the political process that are still supposed to be represented by it. People are elected by a base, but they're there to represent all of their constituencies, and we tend to forget that in this politically charged air. And in reality, it's the notion of compromise where you don't get everything, but incrementally, you do move forward. Exactly. This works extremely well at the state level. We've seen it even play out at the local level. But we are struggling at the national level where we are righteous and we are outright pretentious and we are pontificating, but we are not proposing things that are practical. You know, the challenge with Bernie Sanders was a $19 trillion bill that came with his socialist agenda. Where does that come from when we're dealing with a $20 trillion debt? But, you know, both sides are a little bit too extreme and need to realize that we have to settle down, go for what's possible. Politics is the art of the possible, and we forget that sometimes.
Also, when you're talking about the debt and people have been outraged about $20 trillion worth of debt, that we're now about to add another $1.5 trillion in the name of stimulating the economy. Wow.
I know, and crossing our fingers, and we have data that argues against the logic of it, but logic is not the issue. We know that in the 1980s, when Ronald Reagan mounted a tax reduction, the Department of Commerce by the late 1980s indicated that 70% of the money that was freed up went overseas to overseas investment, because we never restrict it. And we're not doing it again this time. We believe somehow it's all going to be invested in America, but we have a flat earth economy. And so a lot of this money is going to go over and help other economies unless we structure it. And we have the George Bush tax cut, which at the time it occurred, we were at a $5 trillion debt. Then we have two extremely expensive wars, an economic collapse, and here we are now at nearly $20 trillion.
And the answer will be inflation.
Exactly.
All right, let's take a break. More with Fred Locken when we come back.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
Pro Group Management specializes in providing industries with the necessary components to satisfy and exceed workers' comp requirements. Every business has unique needs and specific regulations. Pro Group Management stays ahead of the curve, providing up-to-date services to keep your industry in top form. Discover how we simplify your tasks, improve efficiency, and reduce expense to keep you moving in a positive direction. Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Fred Locken. He's professor of political science at Truckee Meadows Community College. So, you know, it's interesting when you talk to people who are not anti-Trump, and they start pointing out some of the positive things that are happening via the Trump administration, you start to get a different view. Lance Gilman was here last week and talking about how various state, local, county representatives have been back to D.C. and had met with representatives from all the departments back in D.C. who were all asking what can they do to help on a state level from the federal government, talking about how where it had been asked that for every new regulation proposed that two would be removed, that total is currently 16 being removed for every regulation being proposed. And that is definitely beneficial to business, which would suggest to me that it's beneficial to the stock market as well. And yet we don't seem to get that kind of play in the national media.
I think if we simply took the president's telephone away, we would be fine. That cell phone has been his undoing. The Twitter sphere is
now,
not
hang on. He's still president. He's still president. So I don't know if it's his undoing. People may not like it, but it's, you know, and every, you know, that's an interesting point you raise, because every president in recent years has had a method of communicating directly with the public. And this is the modern day version of that. Ronald Reagan certainly used television to appeal directly to the public. And, you know, we may not like, some of us, the content of the president's tweets or other tweets. But that's his way of bypassing everybody to get straight to the public,
including his own advisors, and which has created a tremendous amount of contradictory information for an administration that has a mixed message. In the atmosphere of the mixed message, what is it this week? How has he changed it? The timing of his tweets, which are insanely early in the morning or late at night, this has been very disruptive.
And you know, he doesn't sleep very much. Literally, he does not sleep very much. So that's why he has that ability.
Well, confetti. Under the circumstances, I think it has done more damage than it has been good. And actually, within the social media structure, I am not aware of any previous president that has really used it as a device for putting forth policy.
Well, yes, but I mean, you know, it didn't exist for previous presidents. I mean, when Obama first came into office, they took away his BlackBerry because it wasn't secure. So obviously, the technology has risen to the point where the president can have, I presume, an iPhone and communicate on a secure level, or at least what he's doing is secure. But others use radio, others use television. you know, on the back of trains. I mean, depending on the era and the technology, presidents have often tried to find a way to bypass and get straight to the public.
Well, and historically, it was interviews and press conferences, which have been lacking in this administration in the first 10 or 11 months. I must admit that the notion of limiting it to 142 characters, or now was it 267 characters, is such a superficial mechanism of communication that perhaps it represents the times. But I know that it is distraction.
Hang on.
Yeah.
How many billion users does Twitter have? Does Facebook have? I mean, this is the modern way that people communicate. I mean, they don't have time to do the things that people did in the past because of the way their lives are structured. So this is, you know, look at the Arab Spring. That was all on Twitter. Look at revolutions around the world. This has been on Twitter. And so I don't think you can just look at it and say, okay, it's not a great way to communicate. Did you ever see a movie called The Rise and Rise of Michael Rimmer?
No.
Okay. This was a movie, I'm guessing back in the 60s, okay, British movie. And it was about an advertising agency head who had helped the prime minister become elected. And he was content with that. And then they were visiting a North Sea oil platform, and this advertising executive pushed the prime minister off the rig, and he died. And so the advertising executive ran to be prime minister. And he said, I'm going to let the public be involved in every decision. And so then the following scenes were of all these boxes of papers being delivered to people's homes. And sitting over the dinner table, they would go through all these different things. And so the dad would look at the mother and say, well, what do you think? Should we let China into the UN, Mom? And they would go through all this stuff. And they were getting buried being part of the government. And so the advertising executive, now prime minister, said, well, it seems like you don't really want to do this. So in exchange for making me president, I will take back all of this work. And that's what the public did. And they made him the president of England. It's an amazing satire. But how much does the public truly want to be involved in the binders that every elected official has to take to a meeting? I saw Naomi Jardine of the Reno City Council posted a picture of her binder for her city council meeting, and it was like 1,000 pages thick for one meeting. So is Twitter a better way to converse to the masses? Maybe yes.
And perhaps no. Under the circumstances, to dumb down the political process is not my goal as a political scientist. I think whatever issue you take, if it's a TTP, NAFTA, the issues of North Korea, or the whole issue of China or the Russians, this has to be the most ridiculous method of communication I could imagine. Just because it exists doesn't make it the right one to use. There are and have been demonstrated other ways to communicate with the public. And one of the obligations of politicians is to help people to understand the why, which has been, I think, sadly absent in the first 10 years of the, or 10 months of this administration.
I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you, just making points here. You know, political campaigns are not won on policy papers. Otherwise, Jan Jones would have been governor of Nevada many years ago and served a very successful 8-year term. I believe I and her mother were the only two people that read her excellent position papers. They're done on slogans. They're done on issues from 40 years ago that nobody can prove. I mean, we're seeing that in the current environment. Let's talk more about this when we come back.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
I'm Paul Enos, CEO of the Nevada Trucking Association. Truck drivers are some of the hardest working people you'll meet, delivering over 70% of America's freight and 92% of Nevada's. When there's a natural disaster, they're delivering critical supplies to help those communities recover and rebuild. Every sector of the economy and our nation's military rely on truck drivers. So let's take a moment to say thank you. On the open road or city streets, our truck drivers are rolling to make our economy and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Chad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Fred Locken. He's the professor of political science at Truckee Meadows Community College. Interesting days ahead for the gubernatorial race here in Nevada. You have that perfect split on the Democratic side between Steve Sisolak, somebody who is a Democrat but is very business-friendly, helped push the Raiders Stadium forward, and Christian Kiliani, also a county commissioner who is termed out this time and Sisolak is not, which should make a difference in how much money is raised, but who is somebody that is certainly, I would consider to be the Bernie Sanders wing of the Democratic Party. How do you think that's going to play out?
Well, it was kind of a surprise. I sort of assumed that the goal of the party in the state would be to keep it not a primary, to basically save the war chest for the fall campaign, because we'll be looking at the Republican side for a moment, and they look to be planning to drain as much of the money as they can in their primary. But the Christie entry, I was told, was prompted by a party that wasn't exactly convinced that Steve Sisolak was the guy for the fall campaign. So this will give a real chance to see style. For some of us, we know Sisolak from his days on the Board of Regents. Certainly he has been the power broker extraordinaire in Clark County here. But I think it'll be a very interesting race because they're candidates that know each other very, very well. I agree with you.
Yeah, they sit three seats apart.
And the issue here will be how much, because Sisolak's way ahead in the fundraising, and it'll be very curious to see if Chris G can do it. Voter turnout, though, in the primary will really decide it, and I wonder if that won't ultimately favor Chris, just based on the turnout. A name that's better recognized, I think, than Steve's. And it'll be very interesting to get to the issues that they want to seek out that divide them and how intent they're going to be on that.
I think it's going to be a harder battle for both of them in the rurals and in Washoe County, where they're really not known that well.
Exactly.
It's been a long time since Chris G was involved in the legislature. And even then, not that well known outside of political circles.
But it's Clark County now. You know, that's a very large driving horse in this process of politics, especially when they look at voter turnout in the primaries. The counties turn out, but their numbers are just being devastated by this physical number of people in Clark County.
It's going to be interesting to see if the Trump effect that occurred in Virginia in the recent elections carries over into next year into Nevada, and that we see more people who are either happy or unhappy with the presidency coming out to vote and make their voice heard.
Purely. And again, Nevada, I think, will be in the crosshairs. We will be national news.
I certainly hope so. Fred Locken, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
We'll be
right back.
Sully's Sports Bar inside the Tamarack Junction is South Reno's headquarters for locals to watch all your favorite sports. And now you can enjoy your favorite team on our brand new high-def TVs featuring the Papa, the big daddy of them all. It's our giant 17-foot big screen TV wall. And we have two 79-inch high-def TVs, 12 65-inch high-def TVs, including two party booths for your own private party, and six high-def private booth TVs. Bring in your own headphones and listen to your favorite game right from your own seat. First, make your bets in our William Hill Sportsbook, then enjoy your favorite cold beer, libations, burgers, wings, pizza, and our signature Build Your Own Bloody Mary bar. Then settle in and download our app and listen to any game being shown in Sully's Sports Bar. Catch your favorite team on our new high-def big screen TVs. Sully's Sports Bar is the only place to watch your favorite sports all year long. The Tamarack Junction, just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
It's Tamarack Junction, your junction for fun.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion. For romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in Northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
On our next broadcast, Kimmy Cole, chair of the Douglas County Democrats. We'll see you then.